What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Epstein Chronicles. Well, folks, we're here. Closing arguments wrapped up today, and now the fate of Ghislaine Maxwell is in the hands of the jury. Obviously, they have more time than just the 2 days before the break if they need it, but there's been a lot of talk that they're going to have their verdict rendered by Wednesday. Now, obviously, that's just scuttlebutt. I'm not too sure anybody knows what the jury is thinking or what they're going to do, but people who are familiar with the way these things go and who follow these kinds of cases on a regular basis seem to be moving towards this being done by Wednesday, them having a verdict. Now, again, we'll have to see what the jury comes up with. Maybe they'll need some more time than that. But I would think that if they get this verdict out that quickly, that it could only mean bad news for Ghislaine Maxwell. And boy, let me tell you, in my opinion, if anyone's ever deserved coal in their Christmas stocking, it is certainly Ghislaine Maxwell. This lady tried to set herself up as the victim here. She's tried to set herself up as somebody who is being taken advantage of by Jeffrey Epstein, and somebody who had no idea what was going on in the very house she was in control of. But reality has painted a different picture, hasn't it? When you look at the testimony that we have seen from the survivors, you look at the corroborating testimony that we have seen from the other witnesses, and it paints a very clear picture of Ghislaine Maxwell and her role within Jeffrey Epstein's criminal enterprise. This could have never happened without Ghislaine Maxwell. And that's the point that needed to be rammed home. And I think the prosecution has done a good enough job to make that point and for there to be convictions here. Now, I'm not a mind reader. I'm not Nostradamus. But from what I have seen and from the evidence that has been heard and then the weak, limp-ass wrist defense that was put on by Maxwell, it certainly leads me to believe that there is an uphill battle to be fought for Team Maxwell when it comes to getting their client off. And I always figured it would come down to the game of loopholes and technicalities. It was never an, our client is innocent thing. It was always, well, this trial shouldn't be happening. These allegations are too old. These girls don't remember. And that's what it always was from the very beginning with Ghislaine Maxwell. And she's never exhibited the behavior of somebody who's innocent, in my opinion, for all that's worth. But when you're somebody who is wrongfully accused, you don't go skulking around in holes. You don't hire private security to protect you. You don't avoid being summoned by the court. That's not what innocent people do. Innocent people want to go and defend their name. They want to stand up and say, hey, look, you got it wrong. This ain't me. I don't know who you're talking about, but it certainly wasn't me. And we never saw any of that from Ghislaine Maxwell. And that's why any attempt to paint her as any kind of victim is just ludicrous at best. And then you add on top of that already damning bit of information, you add on top of that what the survivors have said, and just the ones that were on the stand here, never mind the literally hundreds of other girls and women who have come forward. But you look at just what was provided here as testimony, and it's pretty much clear that Ghislaine Maxwell was a central figure in this, and she was not just some victim or some shrinking violet that was along for the ride. So with that said, we're going to take a look at a Rolling Stone article tonight that does a pretty good job of wrapping up what went on inside of the courtroom today. Now, it was a bunch of legalese and back and forth about, you know, different situations within the case, what, you know, information should be included, what shouldn't be included, what should be redacted, and all of that jazz. And this article from Rolling Stone does a really good job of capturing all of that. So let's take a look at this article from Andrea Marks over at Rolling Stone, and let's see what they have to say. Closing arguments are done in Ghislaine Maxwell's case. Her fate is now with the jury. Lawyers have completed their closing arguments in Ghislaine Maxwell's sex trafficking trial. In the prosecution's final rebuttal on Monday afternoon, Assistant U.S. Attorney Maureen Comey winnowed the jury's charge down to a single notion, referring to the four women who came forward as accusers. "If you believe those witnesses, then that's it. The defendant is guilty," she said. And that's pretty much gets to the heart of it, right? Cuts to the chase of it. And while I have been very, let's say, critical of the prosecution, and especially Maureen Comey, I am not a fan. I think she did a very good job today with the closing arguments and hammering things home. But the evidence in this case was much more than he said, she said. In her fiery final statement, Comey tried to demonstrate why it was nearly impossible for the women to be lying. It was powerful rhetoric, but also had the effect of once again illustrating how easy it can be to dismiss sex crimes allegations, even when evidence supports them. And this is a very big, important part, right? This isn't he said, she said. I've said that for years on this podcast. There's really no gray area here, folks. We're not talking about a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old. We all know that a 19-year-old dude, his brain isn't developed yet. That's a gray area. This is not a gray area, okay? This is people in power who are looking explicitly to exploit the most vulnerable amongst us because they knew they could get away with it. That's what this was. There is no gray area here. After that, the judge gave the jury their instructions to begin deliberations and decide whether to convict Maxwell of six counts related to sex trafficking and conspiracy for helping Jeffrey Epstein procure underage girls. Maxwell has pleaded not guilty to the charges. So, the jury has it now, right? Maxwell's fate is in the jury's hands at this point, and it always has been. All of the rhetoric, all of the talk here on the podcast, too, everywhere, it's all worth about as much as your opinion down at the corner store when the chips are down. All that's really going to matter at this point is what the jury thinks. And frankly, I think that the case has certainly been made that Ghislaine Maxwell was a huge part of what went on here, and that without her, this couldn't have happened. Earlier that day, Assistant U.S. Attorney Allison Moe kicked off Monday's proceedings with the initial closing statement for the prosecution. Ghislaine Maxwell was dangerous, she said. She was a grown woman who preyed on vulnerable kids. Moe highlighted Maxwell's closeness to Epstein after her complicitness and her complicitness in his abuse. She called the testimony of the defense false memory expert, Elizabeth Loftus, a total distraction, noting that Loftus herself said on cross-examination that the core memory of trauma is stronger than other types of memory. And this was a point I was hammering home on the podcast, like, I was some kind of genius and the prosecution wasn't going to go the same route, but they definitely did. They saw the same opening there and they punched in on it. You can't have your trauma specialist admit to something that's helpful to the prosecution if it's a defense witness and think that's a good day. It's not. And the fact that Allison Moe brought it up here, I love it. Very, very good job bringing it up here, letting the jury know once again that while her expertise might be in the field, she knows little to nothing about this specific case. And for those of you who have listened to the podcast forever, you know that I've really been a fan of Allison Moe. As far as prosecutors go, and as far as I trust any of them, I've always felt like Allison Moe was kind of a throwback kind of prosecutor. Somebody who's looking to make their bones here because they have, higher visions in the future. Epstein liked underage girls, Moe said. He liked to touch underage girls, and Ghislaine Maxwell knew it. And as the so-called lady of the house, as former employee Juan Alessi had described her, Moe said Maxwell was not only aware of what was happening, but intimately involved in the process of the abuse. This was illustrated by the booklet of rules Alessi said she distributed to house staff that instructed staff to see nothing, hear nothing, say nothing, and included a shopping list of 13 different massage oils and lotions. She managed all of the details, Mo said, right down to the lotions and the oils. It's damning stuff, and you can see why the prosecution brought some of these witnesses forward now in the closing arguments as they tie up some of the loose ends, right? Using Juan Alessi's testimony to, backbone what she has to say here to prove her point and to drive it home to the jury one last time. That Maxwell was playing a key role here. She was the one getting the oils. She was the one getting the lotions. She was the one getting the Massage for Dummies books. It was nobody else. It was Ghislaine Maxwell. As Mo spoke to the jury, her back was to Maxwell, who busied herself shuffling papers and note-taking for a while before staring over her black mask into the middle distance. Mo recalled the stages of grooming as expert prosecution witness Lisa Rocchio had described them, and she claimed Epstein and Maxwell had executed them. It is not an accident that Jane and Kate and Carolyn and Annie came from single-parent households that were struggling in different ways, she said. Once they'd chosen their victims, she said Maxwell and Epstein would get the girls alone, desensitize them to touch and sexual activity, and then control them to continue abusing them. This is exactly what we have talked about here for years, and it's nice to hear it all get played out in court, right? So all of those legacy media outlets that are late to the party here, all of those legacy media outlets that want to talk about, oh, conspiracy theories and this, that, the other thing, you folks are late to the party. You folks are the ones that were negligent in your duty in educating the people about what was going on here. And it's kind of gratifying that you see all of this stuff come out in court now, and we were over the target the whole entire time. It's no wonder that the other podcast, The Jeffrey Epstein Show, was so highly censored. When you're over the target like that, that's usually what occurs. Details from the four accusers' testimonies had been corroborated by additional witnesses like Alessi, three of the women's former boyfriends, and law enforcement officers who searched Epstein's house and spoke to the witnesses, Mo said. Beyond that, the jury had seen phone message records, the household manual, a little black book containing victims' names, FedEx invoices, and bank records showing Epstein paid Maxwell $30.7 million during and shortly after the years of the abuse by alleged by the four victims. She knew. She was complicit. She is guilty, Mo said. And I don't know how anyone can argue with that. She knew. She was complicit. And she was guilty. I think Allison Mo is making the argument that all of us have been hoping to make for all of these years. Look, let's be very clear. Somebody like Ghislaine Maxwell is used to getting off on stuff like this, not having to pay the price. And now that her time has come, well, there's a whole big problem, isn't there? Her family talks about how the system is all destroyed and how the legal system needs to be fixed. And while I agree with that, we're going to start talking about it now that Maxwell has been arrested, that Maxwell's sitting in jail. How about we talk about Khalif Browder? Because guess what? Ghislaine Maxwell, from all of the evidence we have seen, is complicit. Was complicit, and was working with Epstein hand in hand. So I don't care that she's had to sit in jail for this whole entire trial. That's how it all works. The accusers have already been awarded millions of dollars, Mo said. Their civil cases are over. The witnesses have testified they have no financial stake in the verdict, and their stories are backed by documentation and other witnesses corroborating testimony, she said. And again, this goes back to some of the witnesses that were called who were there to verify paperwork, that were there to talk about invoices and all of that stuff. It was the foundational information that we were talking about. And once all of that foundational information was put out there and laid out, well, they built the house on top of it. And that house certainly seems to point to Ghislaine Maxwell being guilty. That didn't stop Maxwell's lawyer, Laura Menninger, from arguing that after Epstein had died, everyone lawyered up. The women's stories changed over time, she said, as they watched media, shared their stories, and talked with lawyers. Their memories had been manipulated in pursuit of money. Memory fades over time, she said. It can be manipulated, and money is a great manipulator. Again, it's always about the money for these people, right? It's never about the actual crime that was committed. Oh, let's totally make everyone focus on it was about the money. And the only reason Epstein was even paying these girls was so he had another level of insulation, right? Well, what do you mean? I didn't know how old they were. They were prostitutes. And that's what he got off on the first time around. This time, that's not going to work out, I don't think. You can't say that these girls are prostitutes. There's no way. But when you talk about how these memories were manipulated and all this other jazz that they've been trying to pump, I think that that whole entire narrative was tossed on its head and destroyed by their own expert. So I think this is a losing battle for them to keep bringing it up. She accused the prosecution of not presenting enough evidence to support their case and aimed once more to discredit the witnesses. She called Alessi, who'd confessed to stealing from Epstein, a two-time burglar, obviously with an axe to grind. She reserved particular ire for the witness known as Jane, telling the jury not to be fooled by claims that Jane may have struggled emotionally to disclose details of her abuse over the years, noting that she had two lawyers who were men and seemingly no difficulty disclosing details to them during a civil suit. That is just absolutely horrid by Menninger. And out of this whole entire group of lawyers, Menninger has been the most condemnable in my opinion. I am not a fan at all of this lady. And she thinks because she's a woman, she can get away with a little bit more. She can be more aggressive with these females on the stand. And it's very transparent. So someone like Laura Menninger is just a grade A scumbag human being, in my opinion. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a need for people like her, right? We gotta have people who are going to defend the scummiest amongst us because that's the way it works. We're all entitled to legal defense, even sickos like Maxwell. But boy, Menninger is just, she's on another level of gross. Jane had testified like an actress who forgot her lines, she said, adding that when Jane had answered questions, her body language had shown uncertainty and hesitation. So Menninger is a body language expert now? She's somebody who knows what body language is? She went to school for that? How many degrees do you have in that, Laura Menninger? My guess is you have as many as I do. That would be zero. So why are you giving us expert opinion? Stick to defending your client and save the expert opinion. Menninger brought up worthwhile questions, like why the women allegedly taking part in orgies with a 14-year-old Jane hadn't considered calling the police. Menninger suggested this was further evidence that Jane was lying, rather than possible evidence of additional co-conspirators in the abuse. She also implied a defense witness could not have taken part in orgies because now she is a housewife. Yeah, I mean, you know, no housewives have ever had orgies. No such thing as a swinger community or people who have proclivities that they like to fulfill. It's all ludicrous. The whole defense is ludicrous. And I don't know how the jury could look at this and not find it laughable. You're going to imply that a defense witness could not have taken part in an orgy because she is a housewife? Or that the further evidence that Jane was lying because there was less evidence that there's additional co-conspirators? It just doesn't make any sense. It's not a winning argument, in my opinion. And I'd be pissed if I was paying the kind of money Ghislaine Maxwell is. Forget it. I want somebody like that dude, Bruce Cutler, who was John Gotti's lawyer. Let that dude come out and go ham. But these people, I don't think she's getting her money's worth here, folks. I think that they got their asses handed to them by a junior squad. When Annie Farmer had visited Epstein and Maxwell in New Mexico, where Farmer claimed Maxwell had rubbed her breasts and showed her how to rub Epstein's feet, Menninger suggested Farmer's arrival had been a surprise. Imagine being Ghislaine, she said to the jurors. Maxwell gave Farmer a tour of the ranch and bought her cowboy boots to entertain the child. Not groomer, she argued. No, she was just a nice lady, this Ghislaine Maxwell. And out of the kindness of her heart, she wanted to buy Annie some nice boots down at the old boot emporium. We all know why Maxwell was there. She was there to make it more comfortable, so Epstein could unleash his disgusting plot and do his disgusting deeds. That's why Maxwell was there. Point blank, period. She argued that Maxwell hadn't targeted the girls because they'd met Epstein through a sister, a friend, a roommate, and on their own. Maxwell was too successful, too beautiful, too educated a woman to fall into facilitating sexual abuse for one man, she said. At the same time, Menninger said Epstein had manipulated Maxwell, seeing other women behind her back. Testimony had showed he had assistants send flowers to other women and ordered Alessi to take down pictures of Maxwell in the house when other women would come over. Everyone knew Jeffrey was keeping secrets from Ghislaine besides Ghislaine, she said. Oh, give me a break. They were playing their hustle. They had their hustle game going, and the hustle game was enacted and on and ready. They were never a couple. Give me a break with that shit. That hasn't been proven by now. All of the evidence we see, all of the testimony by survivors, that shit was a ruse. She asked the jury to hesitate over factors like victims changing stories, absence of more testimony from victims' relatives, and what the defense views as a lack of evidence, like no pictures of Maxwell with the victims, or proof that Epstein had paid for Jane's summer camp sessions at Interlaken, an elite children's arts program, to which he also donated large sums. Justice demands you acquit Ghislaine Maxwell, she said. Speaking of Interlaken, I received an email from somebody who was pissed that we brought up the show here on the podcast, or that the news brought up Interlaken in general, because, you know, they taught there at one point, and, you know, this could have never happened at Interlaken. My response was, perhaps you should be mad at the Institute and not mad at the people reporting on it. Comey finished out the afternoon with her impassioned rebuttal on behalf of the prosecution. The core of the defense's argument is that you can't believe the four women, she said. Never mind that they corroborate each other or the mountain of evidence that backs them up. Hey, what is Comey listening to the podcast here using my rhetoric about this mountain of evidence I'm always talking about? It's a good idea if she's listening to the podcast, get herself nice and caught up. She said it was absurd for Maxwell to claim she didn't know her boyfriend and best friend of a decade had a thing for young girls. She knew her boyfriend was spending time with teenage girls, she said. He was doing it because he was attracted to them. He wanted to have sex with them. 100%, that's exactly why he was doing it. He wasn't doing it because he wanted to hang out and talk about their day at school. He wasn't doing it because he had an interest in their lives. His sole purpose was to get them into his web and then abuse them sexually and physically. That was his goal. The millions of dollars Epstein gave Maxwell wasn't just a standard bank transfer to his house manager to move money around, she posited. The $30 million is, we molested kids together money. Well, you know what, Maureen Comey? How about a RICO case, then? Let's really get it all wrapped up nice and solid, no? If we're going to start talking financial crimes, then I'm here for it, because we could get all of these people caught up in the financial web. They were all connected with ill-gotten gains, every last one of these people. And when you talk about $30 million, that is the right way to talk about it, right? $30 million is we molested kids together money. Very powerful rhetoric for Maureen Comey right there, my friends. The similarities among the victim stories is what makes their testimony most credible, Comey continued, noting that three women said Maxwell had touched their breasts and all described massages that escalated into sex acts. Each witness's testimony was a powerful corroboration for the others, she said. She used a dark analogy of Thanksgiving memories to ask the jury to understand what it must be like to try to recall details of recurring sexual abuse. Looking back on Thanksgiving during your teenage years, you might not be able to remember which year a neighbor visited or which year you ruined a pie, but you know there was turkey because that happened every time. Difficulty remembering certain things doesn't mean it didn't happen, she said. Carolyn remembers Maxwell as a fixture at Epstein's house, like the stuffing on Thanksgiving, there every time. And again, powerful rhetoric from Maureen Comey, straight to the point, and launching Ghislaine Maxwell in the light of somebody who is heinous and pretty much at the wheel driving this whole entire car of nightmares. Further, Comey said the defense theory that the women all lied to make money didn't make sense. Carolyn had named Maxwell as early as 2007 to the FBI. Besides, Comey argued, it didn't add up that four different lawyers had begun convincing their clients to perjure themselves in a federal trial in service of some payments that would already be made to them. And when one was working pro bono, wouldn't the women take their millions and skip out on the testimony? Plus, Plus, they'd have needed to get Farmer's mom and three of the woman's ex-boyfriends in on the lie, too. And if you believed it, they were risking it all. Wouldn't they have told a more elaborate lie? Why would Farmer be careful to say Maxwell didn't touch her nipples? Why would Jane specify that Maxwell had never witnessed intercourse or oral sex with Epstein? They should have implicated her more deeply, Comey argued. If these four women wanted to dirty Maxwell up for a huge payday, they would have told way bigger lies, she said. But they testified for justice and added in hopes that the defendant will be held accountable for her role in shattering their lives. And that's really what it comes down to for these survivors. I know I have talked to a lot of the survivors in this case, not in this specific trial here, but in the overall case. And that's what it comes down to, justice. They have all been deprived justice for so long that they're not going to stop until they get it at this point. And this is a huge step moving forward. If Maxwell goes down, Maxwell gets convicted, definitely a huge step. It's a familiar believe women refrain and a compelling argument for why on earth these women would be here if they were liars. But that's often the case. Testifying about sex crimes is grueling, but that doesn't stop people from disbelieving victims over and over. The coming days will reveal what this jury believes in this case. And that certainly is a fact. We're going to know in the next few days or by next week at the latest what Ghislaine Maxwell's fate is. And after looking at this whole thing as a whole and listening to the closing arguments today, well, at least reading about them and seeing which way the wind was blowing, it certainly looks to me that there's going to be a conviction here. Now, again, I don't have any kind of crystal ball, but it certainly seems that we're on the path for something like that to occur. And I highly doubt that Maxwell is going to walk here. But weirder things have happened, and when you're talking about the American justice system, well, we all know that anything is possible. All right, everybody, we'll start the process all over tomorrow morning with our morning update, and we'll keep an eye on the deliberation and see what happens overnight and catch up on the headlines like usual. Between that time and now, there'll also be a few more context episodes that I'm going to be uploading. All right, folks, I hope that all of you have a great night. And if you'd like to contact me, you can do that at bobbycapucci@protonmail.com. That's BOBBYCAPUCCI at protonmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at BOBBY_CAPUCCI. The link that we discussed is in the description box. Meet